Blog Talk Radio.
Grace and peace, brothers and sisters. This is Bishop Thomas Henry. And today, as each and every day we do this broadcast, you are listening to the Apostolic Voice, where we try to speak prophetically and apostolically to the issues that faces the church and that faces the world. I hope everybody is having a great day so far. And today I got an issue that I really would like to talk about, like to deal with, especially in light of everything that's been going on in the world and in the church. Hopefully this will be a blessing to each and every one of you that have a chance to listen to this particular broadcast, because we want to talk about the church constitution, the church bylaws, 501c3 status, and we want to talk about a host of other issues as it relates to those types of issues in the church and in the body of Christ. And I hope that this blog talk will actually be a blessing to each and every one of you. Before we really get into the meat of this, I have to do this part here, because legally, when you do legal stuff and stuff of this nature, you got to make this disclaimer. So I want to give you the legal disclaimer. We are providing legal information for informational purposes only. This program is not meant to be legal advice. If you are seeking legal advice, please contact your lawyer or your tax preparer. So again, this is meant for informational purposes only. And I do encourage you to go research for yourself. Talk to your lawyer, talk to your financial advisor, and all that, to get whatever information that you may need in this to deal with some of the things that we're going to address today in this particular program. Again, today we're going to talk about the church, constitution, bylaws, articles, incorporation, and all of that wonderful stuff as it relates to ministry, and hopefully we can be a blessing to you. As you probably know, we have been talking about some things that we're talking about and addressing at the COAB Annual Congress. This is why I believe we are different from a lot of other institutions. And I don't say this to be a competition and all of that other good stuff. One reason why we are different, because we try to give you practical information that will help you and your ministry be able to fulfill its God-given purpose and plan. And in order to do that, we got to have our house in order. You hear what I said? We have to have our house in order. The Bible says no king goes to war without planning, without seeking the counsel of his advisor and planning. But there are a lot of people that start a church, they start a communion, a fellowship, a diocese or what have you, and they have no vision, they have no plan, they have no mission, they have no nothing. And then they wonder why things fall apart when certain people get into leadership in them. They wonder why things don't happen like it should, because you don't have your house in order. And the reason why things are falling apart, because your house is not in order. This particular program, I've been trying to really get to this all day long, but finally got a chance to get to it. Have been planning this, thinking about this ever since we discussed some things on Facebook and one of the clergy groups that I have. Many times, many of our churches and people, we have poorly organized our bylaws. We have poorly structured our churches. We have poorly structured our legal documents. And now, because of our poor structuring and poor things, people come in and mess up stuff after we die, after we move on, or what have you. And the house is not in order. So today, that's what we want to address, a few things today that you need to do to put your house in order, to make sure things are right, things are in line and in order. Every church should have governing documents. I'll say that again. Every church, every fellowship, every communion, every denomination, every organization should have some kind of governing documents that govern its function, its organizational structure. Every organization. Did you hear me? every organization should have some kind of governing document, some kind of structure in place. If you're a bishop and you're a bishop-led church, if you make a decree, you need to write it down on paper. You need to sign it. You need to get it notarized, either by yourself, by a regular notary public, or some of your staff members need to sign it to notarize it, to let everybody know that they saw you sign this document, that this is a document that is legal and legal tender in your organization. There are things that a lot of our churches do. And when they get ready to file for their 501c3 recognition, because every church automatically has 501c3 status, but to get the recognition from the IRS saying, giving you a paper saying we recognize your exemption. Some people don't have the paperwork in line and in order, and then they run into a lot of trouble with the government when it comes up to issues like this. And one of the main issues that a lot of churches have is that a lot of times this is what we do when we start our church. God called me to preach. We go find some people that will accept that God has called us to preach. We find a place. We open a shop, and we start preaching. But we have not had an organizational meeting. We have not had an organizational congregational meeting. We have not had an organizational board meeting. No denominational office had a meeting and sat down to decree that church was going to be planted and established in that area on a certain date. There's no association or a union meeting that recognized that church in particular. All you did was just said, I got called to preach, God called me to preach, and I don't care what anybody else say, found you a few people that believed in and went and started the church. And guess what? That wasn't enough. That was not enough for your church to have an official birthday. Your church need to have a business meeting. Your church, that should be a meeting between you and some leaders that officially sanction your church, that sanction your church, that put your church into legal standing with the government. Not just legal standing, even if you don't want to incorporate, there should have been a time that you and your leaders came together and form, if you're a church, if you're a congregation, what it calls articles of association, where if you don't want to go incorporated. We'll talk about that in just a minute. And so there is a lot of issues that should be covered that a lot of times people don't cover and don't understand, because when it comes up to legal stuff in the church, a lot of people tend to avoid that. God called me to church. He didn't call me to be involved with politics. Are you in leadership? The word politics comes from the word polity, the way we govern ourselves. So if you don't believe in government, get out of church leadership. Just point blank. Just get out of church leadership. But every church needs to have an organizational meeting. If you are a fellowship of churches, if you are a communion of churches, if you are a denomination, reformation by any length, then you should have been there to officially sanction that church. Officially recognized. It should be on your book somewhere that you officially was there to help install this pastor, that you was there to help sanction this pastor ministry, gave him a letter of institution, issued a letter recognizing that church as a church in your communion, so that church can have an official birth date. If you are an independent church, then your board of elders or your congregation should have met to organize the church, to declare that on this day we as a church will get established. We as a church will set up rules. We as a church will do this. We as a church will do that. So you should have things set in place to recognize such on the congregational level. Now, this organizational board meeting is very, very, very important. I don't know how many times to say it, but it is very important, because this organizational board meeting literally becomes the birthright of your church. Is where official appointments of the board of directors are made by the incorporator or by the church as a whole. Is where resolutions are written out or established to start a bank account. Is where all corporate documents are approved if it has not already been approved by the incorporator. And all this other stuff, if you're an independent church, is that your organizational meeting that your church should, somebody should be there to serve as chairman besides yourself, to help approve your ordination as ministry and sanction your ordination and all of that other good stuff. It is important Now, if your church has never held an organizational board meeting, then your board needs to meet to approve prior acts of the organization to make it an action of the church. Actually, I don't know how your church is governed, whether your church is governed congregational, whether it's governed Presbyterial, or whether it's governed Episcopally, or whether it's a quasi-type church government like my church, which is a mixture between Episcopal and Presbyterian models. There needs to be a meeting where you recognize certain actions that have happened in that church. That organizational board meeting, should be, especially if you are the pastor, should be the meeting where you sanction, where you yourself sanction, you are sanctioned as the pastor of that particular church, that you are established as the pastor of that particular church and as that, of that particular ministry. It should be where your official time starts, and so that you can establish your official relationship with your church. It's not enough for you to just start a church. And so it's not enough. You hear me? It's not enough for you to start a church and think that's it. Think that that's all that to it. That's all there, that you need, and bam, your church is official. You need to do more. You hear me? You need to do more than just God called me to pastor. You need to do more. You need to do more. The next thing that we need to talk about on the church bylaws, rules, and decorum is that the hiring of a pastor, the firing of a pastor, and succession plans. This is a touchy issue. Listen to what I'm about to say very carefully. Very, very carefully. It's not good to put in your bylaws. Well, let's say it like this. If you put in your bylaws that you cannot never be removed as pastor, you better also put in some stipulations on how you can be removed if you are the founder of that church. Because guess what? If you don't put in your bylaws how you can be removed as pastor, and you put in there all because I'm the founder of the church, I can't be removed, can I tell you, you can be removed. Because when you don't have rules stated in your bylaws, the state laws trumps whatever you don't state in your bylaws. And if your bylaws disagree with the state laws trumps your bylaws. So you need to spell out in your bylaws, in your articles of corporation, in your, well, best to put it in your article of corporation, don't put it in your bylaws, because it's easier to change bylaws than it is in most states to change articles of corporation. Let's just say it's like Tennessee, where your charter, your article of corporation, and your bylaws are one and the same thing. And I think one of the, I think it may be New Mexico, that if you change your bylaws, you got to file those changes with the Secretary of State as well. So every state got different laws. I know here in Georgia, you do not have to file your bylaws with your state. You just file your articles of incorporation with the Secretary of State office. That being said, if you do not spell out how you can be removed as pastor, even if you're the founder, then if your church has a problem with you, they can take you to court. And it will rule not based on your bylaws that said that you can't be removed. It will rule based on state law. And if state law says that you, if you don't put a rule on how to be removed, you better put something there that says, hey, I can be removed from because I preach heresy, I'm caught in the wrong kind of relationship, or something of that nature, and so that you can't be voted out just because they don't like you, just because church ain't grown, or something of that nature, just because folks mad with you, they can't just vote you out, and all that. So you need to put something in it. This is what I always suggest, and I learned this from Calvary Chapel, and I've learned this from a lot of my white brethren and some of our mega church brothers. If you are a congregation and you don't have a bishop, then you don't want, if you as a pastor started your own church, listen carefully what I'm about to say. You do not want your congregation to vote you out. The way you keep your congregation from voting you out is to make sure your bylaws state that the hiring and firing of a pastor is not in the hands of the congregation and is not in the hands of the church board. You need to state that an outside board of overseers are accountable, which are pastors that you and your church acknowledge and choose together. You have the final say so on them. That you and the church should have agreement. If there's a disagreement between you and the church, you have the final say as the pastor on who is the choice. You know, if there's a disagreement because the church don't want them, but you want them, then you have the final say so to make sure to appoint that person as such. And with that being the case, your hiring and your firing should be in the hands of that board of overseers, not in the hands of your church board, not in the hands of your congregation. That means that if your church board wants to fire, then they have to actually go to they have to go to your board of overseers, file charges with them. But then this is what you do, because this is how you protect yourself as a pastor. If they go to your board of overseers and your board of overseers tries the case, and the board of overseers side with you, your bylaws need to state that you as pastor can fire those board members who oppose you, and that you can have new board members elected by the remaining board members and yourself to replace those board members or the whole board if the whole board brought charges against you, so that you can protect yourself, you can protect the integrity of the church, and the church can go on. But I promise you, everything that I'm saying now, we're going to make sure we put these things in the Congress syllabus that will be a part of the 2015 Congress of the Apostles and Bishops. Another thing, and this is what happened behind Pastor People's situation. Pastor Peebles came up, and his mom said some things on the pulpit. Church board disagreed with it, but she didn't have it in writing. And if you want to deal with a church board that is wayward, if you want to deal with a church board that is not doing right, then you need to make sure you put stuff in writing. If you as a pastor change certain things and you got that permission to change stuff, you need to make sure get the board of elders to enter your decisions in the minutes of the church so this stuff can be recognized, so that there won't be no wars in your church. There won't be people falling out of your church because you didn't have things in plan. Listen, it's sad, you know, a lot of people, it's sad to fail and you don't have a plan. It's better to fail when you have a plan, because you can look at the plan and say, hey, this is where I mess up at, and this is where I need to improve at. But a lot of times we do a lot of stuff over the pulpit, but we don't have meetings in our church. We don't have meetings. Sometimes when you're in an Episcopal-led church, things are done by decree of the bishops, decree of either the whole council or decree of the primate bishop. And so you got to make sure when you make these decrees that they are signed by you, legalized. I mean, most times the only thing you really need for a bishop is literally to sign it and have your seal on it. And it's good and all that. And make sure that you have decreed that it is that the people that need to promulgate it. You know, you promulgate it yourself. But you make sure that those who need to see it. You know, that the rules are in a place that everybody have access to, so that you don't have all this crazy stuff happening. Another thing that we need to address that a lot of us don't do is that because we are churches, by law, you can't bring the Bible into the courtroom, even though they have the Bible enough for you to swear on. But you can't, by law, read the Bible in the courtroom, just arbitrarily read it. But what you can do is that when you organize your bylaws, your canons, whatever you want to call them, your rules of decorum for your church, you don't have to write the whole verse out word for word. But what you can do is say this church is governed by bishops. And you put in Ephesians 4:11, Acts 20:28, 1 Timothy 3:1-2, Titus 1:5-9. And guess what? When they go to court and people say this church is not bishop led, all you got to do is say these scriptures right here is the evidence that this church is bishop led. And you read those scriptures. Those scriptures automatically, because they're listed, chapter and verse and number and verses are listed in your bylaws. Guess what? Those scriptures have now become a part of your constitution and bylaws. And you can bring the Bible in the courtroom and read this. And guess what will happen? Usually the courts will side on the side of the church government. They usually try not to get into the inner workings of a church. And so if the church can prove it was actually organized a certain way, then the court side with the government, with the whatever whoever is the legitimate government of the church, the court side with that group, and not usually with the people who bring in the charges against the people that bring the charges. Unless the person bringing charges can show that, like Pastor Peebles did, that they was a legitimate part of the board at that time. So you need to state your scripture. You need to have your doctrine spelled out. You know, like I said, you can spell out the doctrine word for word. You can put a simple statement and put scriptures on it, but you need to put your doctrines in your organizational documents. A lot of churches don't do that. And then when later on, like especially with a lot of you some of you don't approve of same-sex marriages. And if you don't approve of it, you can't say the church don't approve of it. You need to put it down in the Constitution. Amend your Constitution and make it a part of the statement of faith of your church that we do not sanction same-sex marriage. Then state the scriptures why you don't sanction it. And state what happened that you can't be a member. Even all this, so you need to put all that down in your bylaws. You need to have scriptures. You need to state your documents in your bylaws. You need to have a book, a policy manual book that states, you know, what is the policy of the church? What we do if somebody is in that lifestyle, but they're a member of our church, and what do we do if somebody in a lifestyle, if they're in leadership in our church? What we do? Because you have to, if you don't have this stuff spelled out and you try to get rid of folks and stuff, you know, people can act crazy, and all that other stuff. That's why, you know, especially in my church and even in communion, there are a lot of things that we have stated that keeps it simple. So all I have to do as a bishop is just dismiss a person. If they cut the food too much, just dismiss them. You know, most of the decisions we make is made in ACC as a whole council. But I do have that right that if it's causing too much confusion, if it's causing too much problem, I don't have to go to the whole council. I, as first among equals, can actually dismiss that person. Usually I only use that in limited circumstances. And so you need to make sure everything in your bylaws, in your canons, in your organizational documents protect you and protects your ministry. Your membership, you need to decide this is what messes up a lot of people, because a lot of people don't understand that your church can exist and your church can also be incorporated at the same time, and that the corporate organization is separate from the religious organization. Let me prove my point with a cult out there, the Mormon Church. Do you know that the Mormon Church is not incorporated? You got it. The Mormon Church is not incorporated. They lost their incorporation during the time of this polygamy junk, and they lost it, and then I think when they tried again, I think with this the thing, something happened, they lost all of that. They ain't been incorporated in God knows when. And for a long time. I think it was either polygamy or either the interracial issue. But anyway, they're not incorporated. Guess what is incorporated? They actually have two corporations that runs everything for the Mormon Church. The Mormon Church itself is not incorporated. But the Mormon Church has two corporations that manages the finances. One manages the finances, and the other one manages the properties. One of the corporations is called the Corporation of the President of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The other one is the Corporation of the Presiding Bishop of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Their presiding bishop is the highest-ranking bishop in the organization. Their president is not presiding bishop. Their president is prophet, high priest, and seer. He's not presiding bishop. And his corporation technically gives order to the other corporation. And they pretty much run the whole, the corporation of the president, the present corporation handles the money. He handles all the other business connections, and it makes sure that the temples get built, the wards get built, the churches get built, and all of that. And then the corporation of the presiding bishop manages all the property for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And the church itself, guess what, is not incorporated. And see, some of you, that's what some of you don't understand. So you're like, I can't get incorporated because if I get incorporated, the government controls the church. But see, part of being incorporated is to give your church legal standing with the government to own property, to manage his own stuff, and not have to be so that if the pastor did die, the church don't die with the pastor, the church goes on. So you can have a separate legal institution that is separated from your local church. That's why many churches, when they incorporate, their corporation has no members. The only members of the corporation is the board of directors, board of elders, what have you. And the only and the way they become members is whatever way your church itself elects its board members. So those board members of the church automatically become the board members of the corporation. You follow me? I'll use the example, Church of God in Christ, my former denomination. They have a ecclesiastical structure and they have a legal structure that deals with corporate structure. Even though every bishop that is on the presidium, that board of 12 bishops, are board of directors and a part of the legal corporate structure, but in order for them to be a part of that corporate structure, they had to be on the presidium council, the council of 12 bishops. So you can have a corporation of a local church, and the local church and the corporation be two different entities, that the corporation manages the property for the church, and the corporation can only do so much based on what the approval of that church through its board or what have you. So you have to understand church membership does not necessarily you need to determine how your church membership works. Is your church membership going to work? Is that those a member of church or a member of the corporation, vice versa? Do they have power? You know, in my church, the members have a right to voice their opinion of a pastoral, the new pastoral person when it comes in and all that, but they don't have the vote on it. The only person that has to vote is the Episcopal authority for my church outside of me. That when if I do not appoint a pastor to take my place, then the Episcopal authority of my church has the right to come in and appoint a pastor. And all that what he does according to the Constitution, he gets the board of elders to serve as a nomination committee to nominate somebody. If they fail to nominate somebody in a certain period of time, then he himself can appoint somebody he can't be himself, but he can appoint somebody else to be the pastor of the church. I'm really running out of time. Got a little less than 3 minutes here. I hope y'all are getting something out of this. 501c3. People think, well, I'm not 501c3, so the government can't tell me to do anything. According to the law of the land of the United States of America, according to the IRS codes, if you are a church, you are automatically considered to be 501c3. The issue is that you cannot go to the you can't go to certain places as a church and say because I'm 501c3, give me benefits such as you got a nonprofit stamp rate at the post office. If you don't go to the IRS and get that determination letter, U.S. Post Service says that we know you're a church, but you are, and yes, you are 501c3 according to the government laws, but in order for us to recognize you, we need you to get that letter from the IRS that shows that the IRS recognizes you as such. So you understand, you all automatically are it, but you get that letter from the IRS to prove that you're it. It doesn't mean that you ain't it if you don't have the letter. Because you're automatically 501c3 without the letter. Your church. Now, if you are a parachurch ministry, that's different. That is different. That's like saying, that's one reason why if you look at people ministry like Paula White, if you look at people ministry like Creflo Dollar, you look at people ministry like Benny Hinn and is it Joyce Myers and a few others, you will find out that each one of their ministries are churches. Each one of their ministries, in their headquarters, there are chapels. There are sanctuaries in that ministry because they are not parachurch ministry. You know, you may think they are parachurch, but they are not parachurch. They are organized at churches because it's easy to get the 501c3 designation when you are a church than when you are just a parachurch ministry. In these last few seconds, we have provided this legal information for your informational purposes only. This is not meant to be legal advice. If you need legal advice, and professional help, please contact your lawyer or your tax advisor. Now that I've given you that disclaimer for the governmental purposes, you have been listening for the past 30 minutes or so to Bishop Thomas Henry. I am the president of the Congress of Apostles and Bishops. I am the Archbishop and Metropolitan for the Apostolic Communion of Churches. And you have been listening to the Apostolic Voice. Go to our website, register for the Congress, so you can get good information like this. Register for the Congress so you can get the help that you need for your ministry, so that we can help you maintain the excellence that you need in ministry. God bless you. You have a great day in the Lord.